In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh. And my ne'er-do-well, my scruffy, badass, breaking necks, shooting dudes in the head, the one, the only.
Oi! It's Travis Rotz here.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast, where me and my British thug are bringing you graphic novels and trades that we enjoy. It's like a book club, but with comic books, which I guess are books. But we have read a book for you all. For this Noir November, we've already released the first episode of Noir November, where we talked about Criminal, the first volume and the latest volume of Criminal. This episode, we decided let's get away from our two favorite noir authors, our, you know, creators, and let's move into something different. Let's find something else. And that book that we're reading is Mugshots out on Mad Cave Publishing. Mugshots is, let's see, can I get the full names of these guys? The writer, Jordan Thomas, artist, Chris Matthews, letterer, Lucas Gattani, putting this book together. And this is the tale of what, Travis? This book, give us the quick, if you had to tell somebody, give them the pitch. What is it?
Yeah. Crime story, girl goes missing in Brixton, in England, outside of London. In London? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
She's kidnapped. She's kidnapped and taken to the criminal underbelly. But guess who's there to help investigate and find her? Her loving uncle, John, who's a self-admitted bastard himself.
Yes.
And
yes.
A criminal.
Yes. So we're getting this tale of a criminal who is trying to rescue his niece and all of the crap that goes along with that, including some murder, some dirty deeds, a plot twist at the end that I was not expecting, Travis. I don't know if you were expecting it.
Yeah, maybe a little queasy.
Yeah, it was a little okay, not all right with that. And then just some great art to go along with it. So let's talk about this, Travis. Let's talk. Yeah. I mean, last time we spent some time, we just dove into one of our favorite.
Yeah. I got a place to start and dive.
What a little noir with you. Can we talk that? Yeah. What do you got?
Yeah. Oh no, you're right. This is Noir November.
Yeah.
We begin with noir.
I want to talk a little bit about what do you think draws you to a crime story, a dark tale. Is it because we watched Boondock Saints when we were too young? Was it because...
Well, that's the kind of argument that Thomas makes in the preface of his piece here, where he is talking about, you know, this is kind of like Goodfellas meets Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yes.
Right? Which is a Guy Ritchie, which is, you know, like Snatch and all that stuff on there. And that got me thinking because, you know... A lot of my definition of noir probably comes more from film than it does from literature.
Correct.
And because I think of noir as almost like a texture, which the art in this definitely has on there. And so it's funny. What we're going to be doing it next week is Gun Honey. So I've read all the Noir November books. And it's funny going into something like Mugshots, where it feels like the person didn't sit down to write a noir story. But because elements of noir saturate so much of other genres now, that enough elements of noir have found their way into Mugshots, where I think you could call it a noir-esque story.
Noir-esque crime tale, if you will,
yes.
Right? Like,
yeah.
And I would say we read Criminal, and Criminal is not noir in the sense of a detective in the dark shadows, solving femme fatale, solving a story, solving that crime story. But these crime tales, I think, are they have this idea of mystery and dark shadows. And
that crime noir is definitely a genre.
Yeah.
It's a genre of noir. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think as far as, like, did the noir smack you in the face, or were there certain elements that popped out to you in this book that you're like, ooh, that's good noir right there?
I think first and foremost, it ends up being that dark, dark shadow, right?
Yeah.
That dark shadow that we see, the panel layout, and, you know, ends up being a very, like, tight shots with shadows, dark and light, and a lot of
blinds.
Right, the blinds, we get the sort of canted angle of the panel, all those things. And of course,
character designs, trench coats.
And then you've just got the character. Our main character is this sort of, like, we don't really know him.
Yes, and he gets through narration.
Right, we get that patented narration where he kind of gives you the thing. And, you know, you mentioned it earlier, the self-prescribed bastard, right? Like, he comes right out and says, you know, luckily, like, I'm a bastard. You know, it's, you know, he says, I never wanted to be a bastard. It's just all I've ever been good at. And you're like, ooh, okay, I'm in. That's some good narration over the top, as you're getting not a perspective of the story, but his perspective as he's telling it. And I think that truly, that narrator is such a like piece of what feels like noir.
It feels the most noir when we're with him, but we do break away from our main narrator throughout the story. Like, we'll see what some of the other thugs are doing in the conversations they're having.
Right.
And so you do, like, when you're away from the main narrator, you do, like, I think the noir elements start to, because we don't have that first person narration.
Right.
He's narrating over it, but it's like conversations he wasn't there to witness.
Yeah.
And so there's some really interesting play on here. I like this book. I'm going to put it on front street. I quite enjoyed it on here. And can I tell you something that we kind of talked about in noir is I love a good uncle story. As an uncle myself, I always celebrate like a bachelor uncle story.
Yeah.
There's this account. I can't remember what it's called on Instagram. I'll have to look it up. But it's one of my favorite things. It's like uncle vibes. And it's like this guy does like how I feel when my sister leaves me alone with her kids. And it's always like 80s, like Miami Vice or like Rocky or like Terminator type of things with like a really synthy 80s kind of soundtrack on there. Like, it'll be like Maverick and Goose, like, this is how my nephew and I play together. And they'd be like Maverick and like Goose high-fiving. And I love the uncle vibes. And I like the fact that is all the motivation we need to get our main criminal character back into action. It's just like, my niece has gone missing. I gotta go. And
it's this very like Taken vibe. Yeah. It feels, I mean, the suit and everything feels a little John Wick. I mean, it's not as gunplay heavy as something like John Wick, but it has all those kind of vibes of what you would consider the trappings of a crime story, the trappings of a, you know, like, I have a certain set of skills kind of thing that he's got going on. And then you kind of see everybody in his orbit suffers. And I think that's another kind of like that feels very like, yep, that fits this tone, right? Like, he's an asshole or a bastard and he's going to do the right thing. But in the process of trying to do the right thing, he's going to screw up some people's lives, right? Like, his best friend, right?
Ooh, that was hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that whole scene where, you know, his friend has had a baby. He's out of it. He's out of the crime world, right? And he goes like, I need help, man. I got to save my niece. And of course, his best friend's like, yeah, dude, I'm in. And his wife is like, don't go. Don't pull him away. You've got a kid now. And it just goes to hell for
him. That's a death sentence. As soon as like another character goes, but we've got a child. You're like, oh, this dude ain't going to make it.
No. And it just is this very sort of like dark This is a tale where not much good stuff happens. Even though he rescues his niece, it is a dark turn at the end, what he's rescuing his niece from, but not really from. Like, it's...
I think I know what you're trying to say. Oftentimes in like these serial kind of noir crime or noir detectives, is the detective will go through an adventure and someone he picks up along the way is lost, but by the end of it, everything is back to status quo. The other things are. So it's like, God, what are those books I used to read where it's the noir book, but he's a magician, butcher, the guy.
Butcher.
It's kind of like that. I remember reading like the first six of those and it's like, okay, he's going to go on like a detective magical mission. He's going to pick up people along the way and he will lose some of those people, but the essential core cast will be there and ready for him to reset at the end of it.
Yeah.
Right here, we're, you know, we lose that basically the secondary lead, the core family that typically they would go back to and those dynamics would be the same. Is all kinds of messed up at the end of it,
yeah,
because of some news, which I'm sure we'll talk about here later in a little bit.
Yeah.
So unlike some of the reckless stuff, where it's like, okay, he's going to go on this thing. We're going to learn a little bit more about his past each time, but we're going to kind of reset stuff. This feels like, oh no, this, as you're saying, this is really doom and gloom. And yes.
And we have
for the foreseeable future.
right. It doesn't end on like a positive note. I mean, he saves his niece, right? He's able to kind of find out where she's at and rescue her, but the circumstances.
And he gets some cash to help out his widowed friend's widow.
Right. And but it is kind of this, like, it feels grubby at the end, right? It does feel just a dirty story at the end of it, right?
He does in the beginning, he talks about, let me see if I can find it on here. He really is very open about the people in this. He says, I have firsthand experience of this. My father, who had never been shy about cutting corners, breaking the rules, or taking the risk when working an honest job, turned fully to crime after his property development business got gobbled up in the early 90s UK recession.
Yeah.
And so if you take that note and you run it through there, there are really unlikable characters. And there's a father figure in here, which I'm guessing is pretty much a stand-in for his real father, who's met at prison, you know, who we have a prison scene with on here. And from that sense, if you read it like, oh, this isn't like just an author going into a genre, but this is an author who's using a genre to kind of explore past demons and trauma, then it becomes a little bit more personal than just the writer who enjoys writing crime stories. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
On there. Yeah. And I feel that in some of the melancholy that pervades it throughout.
Yeah, it is. It is like just an overly kind of dour book, but not in a bad way, right?
Like in a British way,
right? I mean, it's very like it's dark and British, and like although there are some funny bits in it, there's like, oh, that's
keep
grubby,
calm,
right?
Keep calm, carry on.
Yeah, right. But so we have this crime family who's trying to be like. And then there's the Albanians trying to oust them, right? So you get mob politics in Britain. You get sort of this criminal character navigating this. You get the son who doesn't think his dad's doing a great job running the criminal empire, screwing up, which has got to be the most, like, always happens in one of these stories, right?
Yeah.
But the twist is, come on, dude. Like, the girl who goes missing is the mob boss's girlfriend, right? And so,
we got to break this down a little bit. So, okay. The young girl who goes missing, John's niece,
yes,
we are led to believe was having a relationship with the young mob boss's son, who is like a little bit more age appropriate, right? Yeah. So, that makes sense. It's kind of like a Romeo and Juliet thing. Two people from the other sides of the track. And we're like led to believe because John's family has kind of had a criminal past, his niece would be more likely to get involved in a romantic relationship with a ruffian.
Yeah.
However, as we find out at the more towards the end of the book, that she is in fact pregnant, and it is not from the mob boss's son. It is from the mob boss himself, who is drawn to look at least 40, 50.
No, he's got to be 50. You know what I mean? Like, he's
got to be in his 50s.
Yeah. And he's this big, hulking mass of a dude.
Oh, right? I love this character until that moment.
And his son's this big guy. But then you get this, it just, the way that they talk about it, and how there's one line where when he's rescuing his niece and she's like, you don't know what you were doing. And he's like, she goes, would you rather that I were raped? Would that be better? Like, he can't believe that this happened. Yeah. And then she's like, would you rather that it was forced on me than I did it intentionally? You know what I mean? I'm like, oh God, oh, this is like,
but it also is a continuation of a cycle that we haven't talked about, because in our main character's John's family, his sister, right, his niece's mother, she at 15 got pregnant by a like 27-year-old. So that has been part of this family dysfunction as well. And that kind of led to even more trauma in his family. And then his niece is kind of jumping into this cycle in an even more extreme way. So that did feel like a nice cyclical storytelling where it allowed you to kind of latch on to something as opposed to just a general watch the crime unfold.
Right. And this, I mean, there's a large cast of characters in this, right? So we get the Albanians, we get the mob boss, we get their dad who's, you know, we get John's dad who's in prison, we get John's sister and her, you know, drunk husband, and we get the best friend, and we get a pastiche of like, just like the most mobby looking mob dudes in the background, right? We get all of those things as we're trying to unpeel the onion of this story. And you think out the gate, all right, he's trying to find the son. He's trying to find the mob. John's trying to find the mob boss's son so he can get from him, hey, where's my niece? But that, he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Where is he? And then he's like, okay, so she must be pregnant, and the dad like stole her away to keep him out of trouble. And then it unpeels more and you find out it's the mob boss it got her pregnant. And it's just all of this kind of building back. And during it, you're getting kind of like rough and tumble fight scenes in the club. You get all this stuff. And then you get the mob boss in response to his son, who is like pissed at him that I can't believe you slept with her, blah, 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 grabs him, shoves him against a wall, and then breaks his neck against the wall. Like, kills his own son in this process. And just this, it is this visceral sort of thing that this mob boss becomes as he's trying to hold on to power, but at the same time, bring his family back, right? Because it talks about how he lost a child, and this is his way to get that.
Yeah.
It's his way to get his daughter back is by having another kid. Like, it's just grubby, dude. It's a grubby, grubby tale.
I got to give Thomas, the writer here, his flowers for. I think sometimes when we read something that's, you know, we're from Mad Cave Publishing, where I haven't read from before, I'm not familiar with this particular writer, and it's a really heavily genre piece. We've read books that are kind of sold on their genre, whether they be sci-fi or dystopian, whatever it is. And they might have a cool artist, but then when you get into the dialogue of the characters, it still feels a little bit like, oh, we're really relying on the premise of the story, the artwork, and the genre here. Thomas writes good dialogue. It feels natural in the characters. It does feel like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. It feels like Snatch. It feels like if you pulled these out and put it into script form, the characters sound different, even though they're all from the same world. In some books that we've read this year, let's talk about Criminal. I think I mentioned when we read Criminal that sometimes all the protagonists throughout different Criminal books, they all sound the same.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
their narration is Brubaker. Brubaker's yeah. noir narration.
Yeah.
Here, the characters sounded very different. The Albanian had kind of his own rhythm, his own way of speaking and his own cadence, right? The mob boss, John, John's friend. Now, they're all based in tropes. Like, he's not creating like a new voices for these yeah. type of characters, but they are very distinct within the story.
Yeah, for sure. I think that he does a really good job of writing. I think my only thing that kind of tripped me up is, although I do really like the art, I think that Chris Matthews, some of these characters don't look distinct enough. And I think that that might be the thick line and the coloring, right? So you get a couple mm-hmm. of like hulking dudes and you're like, oh, which one is that? Which hulking dude am I looking at this very moment, right? You know, you kind of go like, okay, no, that's his brother-in-law. But then you see another guy who's kind of balding and you're like, oh, that's the mob boss's henchman. Who also kind of yeah, looks like
there that. Was one panel in particular that was really important for the storytelling early on where I couldn't figure it out is when it was the flashback to when John was getting kicked out of Brixton and the guy yeah. they were kind of smaller characters and they both looked the same and one was saying like don't ever come back here. I'm like, who is that? And apparently it was the big mob boss, but the character, I'm like, I can't tell. You know, so maybe yes. I'm still reading that wrong, but yeah, I agree with you that for some panels in particular, you have these hulking men in white shirts and ties, and you're like, I'm not following.
There was a couple characters where like because of the coloring and you can't distinguish like a hair color or like this guy's slacks are tan, that guy's slacks are black, right? Like you have those things that you're not able to do because of the coloring. But I will tell you, like, I think it's that heavy ink work. Because if you go back at the end of this book, there are some sketches of these characters, right? That don't have those heavy lines. And so three of those characters, so Alan is his brother-in-law, and Frankie is one of the mob boss guys, fat henchmen or something like that.
Yes.
But they look too much the same. One has suspenders and one doesn't, but they look close, but in the line work, they don't look as close. And his just sketches of them. But I think once you put like the heavy inking on it, that's where you kind of lose the delineation between a couple of those characters. Those are really otherwise, most of them I was really kind of able to tell who they were and tell them apart. The son has a distinct haircut, right? Like John has his distinct kind of cut. You know, they all have that kind of, you can, you know, the mob boss has the white streaks in the side, very mob bossy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Albanian.
I turn to the back of it and I'm looking at the pictures of Jordan Thomas and Chris Matthews. And I'm like, these two have to have a podcast together, right?
Two podcast bros talking about stuff. So I like the story. I thought it was good. I think this is a nice kind of. A different, that twist at the end, I wasn't expecting. That felt very like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. I mean, it's gross, but it's a really good kind of twist that I did not expect that made the story not play out the way I expected it to. Right.
Right. I
appreciate it.
I'm like, am I in love with this book? No, but am I thoroughly impressed by this book? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I thought this book. Let's talk about the art now. Let's talk about this art. You can talk about these heavy ink lines. This was just such a treat to read because it's so different than anything we've been reading these past couple of months.
Right. So just for the listeners, it ends up being black and white and one other color, right? So parts of the book are in this blue where it's the same blue kind of gives you the highlight color of stuff or the non-black tone and the white is the highlight. And then there's this kind of like burnt sienna, this kind of rusty orange. That's the other part of it. And Travis, did you feel that there was a distinction between those two or you just, I didn't notice if there was a reason why it changed.
Action.
Is it at, maybe.
Yeah, it just, usually when someone's being attacked.
Yeah,
but not always. Not always. I mean, a lot of it. Oh, yeah. Once you turn it,
I'd like to like look back at it again and see if I can figure out like what the, if there's a reason for that color change. It didn't stick out to me intentionally at first. It's used at first in a flashback to kind of differentiate between, you know, two different stories.
You would use that as a flashback, right? Is like, even because, like you said, it's kind of the equivalent of a sepia tone.
Yeah.
And like, I would say most of it's action, but some of it is off on there, which makes me think that maybe there's another reason. There's got to be a reason for it. They put too much care into this book for me not to get it. But
it does feel very much like there's a reason for it, right? Like, it is like,
I read this book pretty quickly because I waited till the last minute and like, oh, it's pretty quick. And it is a pretty quick read, but it's not quick read. It's not gun honey quick.
But it does feel, maybe you're right. Maybe it is when there's heavy action is when it's orange. I believe you are correct. I think you are correct. That's when big action happens is when it's in orange. And so maybe it's the like the heightened sort of like bah, 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 that he's kind of, you know, like
in Kill Bill.
Yeah. Like giving you the jazz to happen over top of it with that color in it.
You like jazz?
Yeah. You like jazz? I do. But I really did enjoy this book. I read like a chapter a night. I think it's broken into three chapters, right? Four. Yeah. So I read a chapter a night. I could have read it a little quicker, but I'm in the middle of reading a novel right now. So I was like, I'm going to read this chapter and then I'm going to get into my novel and then I'll fall back asleep and then I'll read this. And, you know, so it took me four nights to get through it, but not because I didn't want to read it, but just because I was, you know, kind of savoring the sort of like it. When you hit that chapter end, it felt like, okay, that's like a good little episode. Let's move.
Yeah.
Let's give it a break and get to the next one.
I think I would have preferred it like that too, honestly, just because, you know, a little more time to digest it, a little more time to look around the panels because you're like, well, it's heavy ink lines and just bold colors. There's not much to look at. I go, but there is, I think it's really kind of cool.
There's some really good camera angles, if you want to call it that, the panel angles. There's a lot of like interesting silent panels, right? There's not a lot of them, but when he does them, they feel purposeful, right?
Oh,
there's
shout out to the corrupt cop too. I really liked her.
Oh yeah, that was an interesting story. I don't think she's we got horny. Enough of her, right?
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah,
I don't think we got enough of her, but I'm like, oh, that'd be a fun character.
Had we I wouldn't be like, oh, give me more immediately. But I could see myself picking up another volume of this. Because I like this world.
It felt a lot like
John.
Parker.
He's not super. It does feel a lot like Parker. I actually might say I like this better than Parker, honestly.
Ooh, I don't know about that. You should go back and read another Parker.
Okay. All right. I mean, just to be fair, like I just pulled that on my butt. I'm like, it's been like 6 years since I read Parker. So,
I think this is Parker's kind of. I mean, since Parker's based on a novel, Parker is less comic booky. I mean, it's very comic booky, but there's large swaths of narration that kind of go along with what you're seeing. But there's just some really good panels. I mean, there's one in particular where the mom gets home, her husband's in the hospital, right? Like the niece, like John's sister, her husband tries to go to the club to go ask where his daughter is. He gets kind of beat up and saved by John. And then he's in the hospital. And then, you know, the wife's visiting him. She comes home and there's this kind of like beat to panel where she comes in. She looks tired as crap. She eats or like doesn't eat, but plays with her food at the table. The next panel, she's in the shower. Then she like goes into bed. She's in her, what I assume is her daughter's room, right? She goes in her daughter's room. She like goes and lays on her daughter's bed, finds out her daughter's reading a book, opens it up, finds a plane ticket, all of this stuff. And you're like, okay, all right, we're getting, but there's those beat to beat moments that he does really well in the art that I really enjoyed the pacing of it and the story of it. The dialogue is good. It doesn't.
The covers are amazing too.
Oh yeah. 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 Good fun. Like good fun covers. Just, I mean, it's just kind of a pulpy dark noir-y good flip little to fun
back,
stuff.
Flip to the back page. Look at some of these other titles by on the Mad Cave on here. We should check some of these out. Some of them sound interesting. You've Been Canceled. Don't Spit in the Wind. The Last Session. Nottingham. Ooh, Josh, I would love to read a Robin Hood story in comics. Or a Robin Hood adjacent story. That would be kind of cool.
We might have
Battle Cats. John
Whisper,
Tiffany, which looks
Whisper
like a John
of the
Wick.
Woods.
Whisper of the Woods, which looks like Witches cover.
Yeah.
Hunt, Kill, Repeat. That one doesn't look that great to me. But, you know, it looks like there's some interesting stuff happening here. Certainly lots of different art styles. That Don't Spit Into the Wind looks really cool.
Yeah, I'm
interested.
That was a Prophet. It is a little Prophet-y, or at least one of those guys who did one.
And is that a flamingo
Prophet
on his suit? I'm
basically a flamingo on his suit.
Check that out.
But
I'm really interested also to check out more stuff by this publisher.
And I think that's the joy of when, you know, oftentimes we get in the traps of on this show of like, okay, what's the next thing? I mean,
we old man it. Like we start to like figure out our tastes and then we cater to those tastes.
We do. And often, look, Noir November is a distinct way for us to lean into something that we really like. But I think this book, and I haven't read Gun Honey yet, but the next book we're doing.
Oh, you haven't?
No, the last book we're doing for Noir November is not, it doesn't look very, it's very, it looks more pulpy than
Gun Honey. We're going to save that for next issue. We're going to talk all Gun Honey.
But next one is going to be Gun Honey. And these three tales that we're looking into, I believe they're going to feel very different by the end. And I think it'll lead to an interesting conversation about what do we like about this genre? What did we take from it? Right? Like, I think that'll be an interesting piece. And I'm looking forward to leaning into what I believe is the cheesecake in the tart of Gun Honey, right? Yeah. Like,
well, sweet. It's got honey right in there.
All right. So any last words on mugshots, Travis?
I like it. Like I said, obsessed with it? No. Impressed by it? Yes.
Yes. Agreed.
And I also like when it's like mugshots, you think of it as like criminals, but like, and they're like, look at these mugs.
Mugs.
And I'm like, because like mugs referring to just like, you know, your street criminals.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it.
And a lot of them did get shot.
They did. A lot of them did get shot. All right, folks, thank you for tuning in. You can find all of our episodes at comicexposure.com or your favorite podcast app. Like us, rate us, review us, all that good stuff. If you want, you can leave us a comment on our Spotify. We do check those. That's the one place that we kind of normally check. So feel free to do that if you want. Next book up is Gun Honey. We have the Halloween Scream Queen back on to talk about Gun Honey because we thought, hey, if two guys are going to read a book that has maybe a bit too much TNA in it and we want to seem less creepy, we should have a woman on the podcast with us.
I'm pretty sure I could still make it creepy, Josh.
So please check it out. Go read that. Go pick that book up too. It's out on Titan Comics. It's Gun Honey, Volume 1. I think there's a 2. I don't know. Play along with us, have fun, and read some noir in your November. If you have a suggestion for us to read that you're like, oh, if you like these crime stories, go check out this one. And we might just do that. All right, folks, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next trade.